On this week's 51%, we speak with feminist activists Gloria Steinem and Lema Bowie about their new children's book, Rise, Girl, Rise, and the power of collective action.
Gloria used a phrase that I like, that we are linked and not ranked, and that I think is the recipe for successful community.
We also meet a fashion designer in New York's Capital Region who crafted the inauguration suit for Albany's first black mayor. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on. I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it. I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. Our main guests today are longtime friends and household names in the movement for peace and gender equality. Gloria Steinem is a feminist icon, author, and journalist who co-founded Ms. Magazine, the National Women's Political Caucus, and the Women's Media Center. Lema Bowie, meanwhile, is a Liberian peace activist and Nobel Peace Prize winner who led a nonviolent movement of women to end Liberia's civil war in 2003. Despite coming from different corners of the globe, Steinem and Bowie see a lot of similarities in their activism, and over the years they have frequently worked together on various causes. Now they're out with a new children's book encouraging young girls to do the same. Rise, Girl, Rise tells the side-by-side stories of how Steinem and Bowie grew up and found sisterhood by working with others to make change. With a strong emphasis on togetherhood, Rise, Girl, Rise teaches kids that collective action can fight injustice, and that even if they are far away, so-called sister friends are bound by their dedication to the greater good.
I've known Gloria for a long time, and I feel like at that moment when the thought were brewing, it was important for us to do this, to show that across culture, beyond our individual spaces, that there is commonalities, you know, because we've seen a lot of divisions today. And so I wanted it, but I also wanted, as a young, in quotes, I'm not that young, feminist from Africa, that it's possible to hold your sisterly solidarity firmly. I mean, this is history. The book is legacy. And for me, I wanted to honor Gloria for someone who's been in my life for a long time now.
You mentioned there are a lot of similarities in your stories, even though you grew up in different parts of the world. What are some of those commonalities that you wanted to share with readers?
Well, I think that we are encouraged to think about the world in a divided way, not a unified way. And in fact, there is much more that unifies us at any given moment or across continents than divides us. And that's what's so wonderful about Lema's book. It's actually for all ages, but you can begin with it very young and get the understanding, the reality, the feeling that we are together on this global spaceship Earth.
I also think that some of the common themes is one that both of us were young and at one point and we were allowed by our parents to be us, be you. There wasn't any level of you have to fit this box. Mm-hmm. I tell people most times that I'm not the stereotypical African girl. I grew up with freedom, the ability to be, use my voice. And that's the common theme. The other theme is the understanding of community. Both Gloria and I believe in the whole thing of community. Yeah. And this is not Lema's book, Gloria. It's our book.
Well, on that note, you know, that you had parents who gave you that freedom when you were young. You know, I feel like reading this book is a way for parents to tell their daughters that, you know, they too have that freedom. And when it comes to the community aspect, this book starts by using the word me, but quickly shifts into using the word we a lot. Not even saying things like, you know, you can do this, but we can do this. Tell me more about the decision to lean so heavily on that word we.
For both of us, I mean, the greatest punishment everywhere in the world is isolation. We are communal creatures, yet we are sometimes taught when we're young that the globe is too big for us to communicate. And this is a global book. I mean, there's nobody in the world, I don't think, who couldn't connect with the images and the thought of this book.
Absolutely. When it comes to collective action, you both have a lot of experience in this realm. What would you say is key to successful collective action?
Well, I think an understanding that everyone carries a level of significance is not about a one person. Everyone brings some kind of gift to the fold. Everyone is important. Gloria used a phrase that I like, that we are linked and not ranked. And that I think is the recipe for successful community, recognizing the humanity in the other as well as within yourself.
And just the simple act of reminding ourselves to listen as much as we talk and talk as much as we listen, just balancing that makes a huge difference.
I mean, this book, obviously, we're talking about some pretty serious subjects here of injustice, inequality, and civil war. How did you go about writing about some of these topics in a way that kids can easily understand?
Well, because it's our experience. I'm fresh out of high school, my country went to war. And so, as a young teenager, I was able to see and manage to navigate. And then I started having my own children who were living in divisions. But based on my own experience, I told myself there are certain things that I don't want my children to carry because hate is too much of a burden to pass on from one generation to the other. Division is too much of a burden to pass on. But also that sense of you don't belong is too much of a disempowering factor to allow your children to go with. So this book is just filled with everything we've lived, everything we've experienced, and some of it we have not been able to achieve. So those are our wish or wishes for the future.
When it comes to the feminist messages in this book, I guess how would you describe the way that you're presenting feminism in this book? You know, feminism has changed a lot over the years, and you know, there's even debate about how it should look today, at least in the US. What kind of feminism are you presenting?
Well, it's universal. I mean, if we're going to have an equal humanity, we have to have girls and women who see themselves as equal. I suspect that we will eventually get to a gender-free or more gender-free society than the place we are right now. And that requires the imagination to go before us, and then progress will follow.
I know this is a book with a global perspective, but you know, here in the US at least, there's been a shift toward more conservative ideas around gender and gender roles. Women have lost some of the rights that we had gained over the years with the fall of Roe v. Wade. I guess, what do you make of this time for the US, and how do you hope to promote, I guess, better gender equality for girls and women going forward?
You know, it depends where we are in this country and what we're doing, but we may be the only big democracy that has never had a woman in leadership. We have never had a woman in the White House, which is crazy. We're missing half the talent. And we need to begin with understanding our shared humanity, intelligence, empathy, everything as children, and that allows us to say, wait a minute, where is everybody when we're at older stages?
You mentioned empathy. What do you think is particularly important for us to be teaching our children right now about empathy?
Well, that we're all human beings. We're all people. We're all unique. We're each unique. We share our humanity. I have had in my life too, institutions that were kind of compensations. I mean, I went to an all-women's college, but I hope that less and less of that is necessary.
Well, Lema, you know, this is a book that adults can learn from, too. Is there anything that you're hoping parents and teachers will take away from Rise, Girl, Rise?
Definitely. One of my favorite parts of the book, I'm grabbing it right now, is at the back of it. And it talks about, when I put my hand in yours, together we do what we could never do alone. And I think that is the message for the world that we live in today. Because regardless of where you come from, regardless of what your political ideology is, everyone needs a companion to move forward. You know, in our African tradition, we believe that the broom that is used to sweep, if you take one straw to sweep, it's impossible. But if you put many straws together, it makes sweeping very easy. And so that, with that analogy, I believe that we all need a community. And I think that's the message that we need to begin to teach our children, not just our sameness, but our difference, a community of different people. There is a word that we use in this book called togetherhood. And I think that is the another message that parents should push forward, togetherhood.
Yes, I love that word, togetherhood. And I want to just emphasize again that there is a reason why the greatest punishment everywhere in the world is isolation. We are communal animals. We need each other. We don't generate all the chemistry we need and all the brain action we need if we are solitary. We need each other.
Absolutely. Well, now the book is out. I hate to be the person who asks, like, what's next? But, you know, with everything going on in the world right now, everything going on in the U.S., is there anything you're particularly focused on in your activism going forward?
Well, my editor would be glad to tell you that I owe a book of essays and have owed one for a while. So with Lema's inspiration, I hope I actually get it done.
Well, for me, is being back on the continent, working with my foundation, providing leadership and educational opportunities for young people. But then also here in North America, I run an institute at the City University Law School on gender, law, and transformative peace. And I think with those three and all of the global travels and advocacy, that's a lot to carry alongside children and all the other things that I need to do. But for me, if Gloria is not stopping anytime soon, girl, I still have a long way to go.
Yes, I'm the older one.
Well, Gloria and Lema, thanks so much for taking the time. Is there anything that we haven't touched on about the book that you want readers to know?
I think maybe one last thing that everyone, probably most people, have never asked about is, if you look at the back of the book, there's a picture of Gloria and I, and that was when we went to North Korea. So in 2016, we went to North Korea, and really and truly, I think that trip was also an embodiment of sisterhood, togetherhood, and peace. Yeah.
How so? Tell me about that.
Well, I don't remember. Were we 16 or more? But a group of us went from different countries around the world with a group called Women Cross DMZ. And I think we spent 5 or 6 days in North Korea, just engaging people-to-people democracy. Gloria and I happened to be the ones that were waking up early every morning to either be on CNN or on some show talking about our experience in North Korea. We met with a lot of North Korean women. We experienced their culture. It was not a political trip, so we did not meet with the politicians at the time. But I think it was a beautiful trip. And once we ended with the North, we went to the South, and we spent a few days there also engaging with people. So that I think is also, when you look at some of the pictures of the book, that is also inspired from that journey that we took here.
Yes, I think so too. The fact that we took a trip where we were not supposed to take a trip, where everyone told us we couldn't go, but we unified to some extent across the boundary of no contact between North and South.
Lema, Naima Bowie and Gloria Steinem are both longtime activists focusing on gender equality and peace. Together, they tell their stories in a new children's picture book called Rise, Girl, Rise, Our Sister-Friend Journey Together for All. It's out now through Orchard Books. Gloria and Naima, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Once again, the House has passed a version of a bill that would impose strict new voter ID requirements ahead of the midterm elections. The Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE Act, would require voters to provide proof of citizenship, like a passport or birth certificate, when they register to vote. President Trump has made the SAVE Act a legislative priority for him. Republicans say it is needed to curb voter fraud and prevent non-citizens from voting in federal elections. To be clear, it is already illegal for non-citizens to vote, and many experts maintain that voter fraud is extremely rare. Democrats say the SAVE Act would effectively make voter registration harder for millions of Americans. Research from NYU's Brennan Center for Justice estimates more than 21 million Americans don't have easy access to a passport or birth certificate. When the bill passed the House last year, there was a lot of outcry about how it might particularly impact married women. I spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Maddow, director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University, New Brunswick.
If your passport is updated to reflect your new name, that would satisfy. Or if not, you'd have to go and update your passport. But it would just add more time, more burden.
There have been multiple versions of the SAVE Act proposed since that conversation. The version passed by the House this week, called the Save America Act, reportedly creates a process for those who have changed their names to provide the necessary paperwork, but it also adds more restrictions. The Save America Act would require you to present a photo ID every time you vote in a federal election, even if you vote by mail. It would also require states to take extra steps to ensure their voter rolls are correct, and it would create criminal penalties for any election worker who registers someone to vote without that citizenship documentation. The SAVE Act faces a rough road in the Senate, where Republicans, as of this taping, lack the 60 votes needed to overcome a Democratic filibuster. It's worth pointing out that a majority of Americans do support requiring photo ID at the polls. A survey by the Pew Research Center last August found 83% of participants favored the idea. A majority also favored early voting and voting by mail. If all of this is of interest to you, don't worry. We will be talking more about the SAVE Act next week. In some lighter news from New York's Capital Region, the city of Albany inaugurated its first Black mayor this year. Democratic Mayor Dorcia Pliers wore a white suit with a hand-embroidered tulip on the lapel. The designer of that suit, a Nigerian-American fashion designer named Mo Rabiu, pulls from an eclectic mix of material in her work, like upholstery, denim, satin, and yarn. WAMC's Mariam Ehmed spoke with Rabiu about her work and what it was like contributing to Albany's mayoral history.
Mo Rabiu immigrated to the U.S. in 2005 to study accounting at SUNY Plattsburgh, a path she thought would ensure her success. But after spending more than a decade in the field, she realized she wanted to pursue something more fulfilling.
I love numbers, but it's not as creative. You know, we can't make 4 and 8, you know. So when I was doing it, I wanted my parents to be happy and proud. But also, you know, I'm creative. I have a creative spirit in me. And this is how this was birthed.
After the lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic, Rabiu took over a store on North Pearl Street in Albany, European Tailoring and Alterations, and started working as a tailor full-time in 2021. While she enjoyed the work, she wanted to create something of her own. Rabiu hated discarding garments, and her first inspiration for her work was repurposing scraps from the tailor shop.
You know, I hate just throwing it in the trash. So I started making stuff with it. So I would combine pieces, I'll put them together, and it gained a lot of attraction in the community. And people were like, wow, this is really cool. It's sustainable work, a sustainable brand. And then I started doing that and I really enjoyed it.
Rabiu has worked with upholstery, denim, and crocheted yarn as well.
Fabric is not safe around me. That's all I'm going to say. Anything that is a fabric, I would take it and work with it. I've remixed a lot.
Although she compares picking a favorite design to picking a favorite child, She says her first attempt to make a piece of her own, a blanket she turned into a hoodie, was transformational.
Because it was just a blanket, and then the idea of like creating something that is one of one, the feeling of knowing that nobody has what you have is like, oh my God, I only have this. You know, you can't get this at the mall. It's not in any shop, you know. So I think that was my first creation, and then I think that was like one of my favorite, like the feeling of, well, I think this is going to be a thing.
Since founding her own brand, So Radical, in 2022, Rabiu has had a meteoric rise, showing her work in Paris and London Fashion Weeks in 2024 and 2025. She says she is proud to represent the capital region on global stages.
Every time I have a fashion show, when I meet people, a lot of people ask, oh, so where are you in New York? And I'm like, 2.5 hours away. So it's they automatically think it's New York City because, you know, that's the market when it comes to fashion. But no, just being from Albany, New York, and doing this is amazing. It's amazing. And I'm not going to New York City either.
Rabiu also got another chance to contribute to Albany history this year when she was asked to design Mayor Dorsey Appleer's suit for her inauguration ceremony. It was a cream suit with a tulip motif on the jacket, a motif Appleer's requested as a tribute to Albany.
She came to me and we talked about what she would like. And that's how this started. And she wanted a particular color. She wanted to highlight Albany tulip. So I was like, okay. I was able to get the fabric and we started working on that. And as she would walk by, she would just say hello. And I'm like, you can't see it just yet. But it was amazing. We worked together tirelessly on it.
Rabiu said it was particularly meaningful to contribute to a history-making event.
It was definitely history in the making, you know, knowing that that's, you know, what she's going to be sworn in as the first Black mayor of Albany.
With her next major shows coming up in New York and Milan, Rabiu wants to continue to represent the capital region around the world. And she also has her eye on higher office.
Yeah, I could do, you know, I could work with female and female in power, not only just any, like female in power. So I think the governor is next and I'm putting it out there. If anybody knows, come see me. Downtown Albany.
Reporting for WAMC News, I'm Mariam Ahmed.
Finally, in Western Massachusetts, the Clark Art Institute has named a woman to be its next leader for the first time in its 70-year history. Deputy Director and Chief Curator Esther Bell has been tapped to take the reins on July 1st. A graduate of the Williams College Graduate Program in the History of Art, Bell's first proper museum job was at the Clark more than 25 years ago. Her career took her from Paris to New York City to Cincinnati to San Francisco before returning to the Clark in 2017. Bell spoke with WAMC's Josh Landes about her plans for the museum.
I am so proud of the exhibitions that I've organized in my time here. There have been quite a few. When I first arrived, I organized an exhibition about Renoir, The Body, The Senses, which was a highlight of Renoir on a big anniversary year, and Renoir being one of the great strengths of the Clark's collection, the second largest collection of Renoir in this country. But it was a fresh take on the artist, a kind of an angle that had never been explored before. And that's what I've always enjoyed doing as a curator, is kind of finding untold stories or hidden stories. And another very proud exhibition of mine was the Guillaume Lettier exhibition in 2024 that we did with the Louvre and also the Memorial Act in Guadeloupe. It was about this artist named Guillaume Lettier, who was born in 1760. He was born enslaved and moved to France and became one of the most famous, prominent painters in the history of French painting, yet there had never been a book written about him, never been an exhibition, and he was an ardent abolitionist. He was a rival of Jacques-Louis David, and so it was an incredible project telling this really untold history and sharing it to people for the first time here in Williamstown, and then in Paris, and then in Guadeloupe. So just fantastic.
So yeah, with this incredible opportunity to take charge of the Clark, what are your goals for the institution? I mean, you're coming into it with a lot of well-earned institutional knowledge about it already. Where do you see its future going under your leadership?
That's a great question. I believe that the Clark truly is one of the most excellent museums in this country. I want people in Berkshire County to know that this is their hometown museum. They should come here all the time and feel most welcome here. And I want this to be a destination for people from all over the world. My plans for the Clark, we have a lot of really exciting things coming up in our future. You might have heard we recently received a gift from the Osso Tividian Foundation of 331 priceless, amazing works of art from the history of art. They're all coming here, and we're building a new wing. We've hired new staff to oversee this vision. So this is a really exciting moment in our history. We're also really thinking about how we can expand our learning and engagement programs, our scholarship, how we can bring people to the Clark who are interested in nature to spend time on our 140 acres of beautiful pastoral land. So I think there's a lot in store for us here, and I'm really excited to share this institution with Berkshire County and also this country and the world.
Now, speaking of this country and the world, you're stepping into this leadership role during a pretty fascinating window of American and world history. You know, I've spoken with State Senator Paul Mark, who's done work on this Commonwealth-wide level to draw attention to the need for support for cultural institutions in the Berkshires during this time. You know, we've heard a lot about, you know, this complicated environment in America around the arts and around, you know, federal cuts to arts programming and, you know, actions taken against arts and cultural sectors by this current administration. Any thoughts on what it means to take over a major art institution like this in this environment?
Well, we really thank Senator Mark for his support of cultural institutions. And I would just say that there's never been a more important time to be working in the cultural sector, in a museum, in the music, in the theater. Arts provide enjoyment. They provide solace. They provide profound meaning and reflection. And I truly believe that coming to a museum, looking at a gorgeous painting, provides a profound kind of window into the history of human experience, and that is grounding. And actually, there's scientific studies that show that it's good for your health, as is walking outside in a forest, which we have here at the Clark, and then coming inside to look at a landscape. So again, I think that museums can be places of solace, of comfort, and of community. And I would just like to underscore that the Clark is for our community, and we welcome our community here.
That was Esther Bell, soon to be the first woman director of the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts, speaking with WAMC's Josh Landes. You can learn more about the Clark at clarkart.edu. Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio based in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at our website, wamcpodcast.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King for 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night, head on the hall.